deal? The Titanic. We're going to talk about the Titanic tonight. How did? Yeah, I mean, you came to church to learn about the Titanic. I want you to think about something interesting about the Titanic I was thinking about the other day. This was designed to be the most seaworthy, the safest vessel ever to have been designed. The architect of the Titanic was on the ship in that maiden voyage from Europe to Americas that never made it. Interestingly, if you read a little bit about it, you will find out that the Titanic had lifeboats for less than half of the people that fit in the boat. And the argument was that the Titanic was unsinkable, and therefore those boats were, in case they had to rescue people from another boat that was sinking. That was the mentality. Can we kill some of these? They're really blinding me right now. That was the mentality. The mentality was that there were people, that this boat was unsinkable, totally unsinkable. That night, they were traveling, and they got a warning from a ship that had been by the area ahead of them, the area that was sinking, that had icebergs, huge icebergs, that was very dangerous for the ship, and they ignored the warnings. They kept full steam ahead. They were so confident that the ship would not sink. The captain was not up at the bridge. When they hit the iceberg, the captain was in his cabin. At night, sailing through the harshest part of the journey, and he was lying in his cot sleeping. Because this ship, no problem. Unsinkable. And that arrogance, that hubris, that idea that you're on an unsinkable ship and you're absolutely right is very dangerous, as they found out. They hit the iceberg, and in 4 hours, the unsinkable ship was sunk. It only took 4 hours. This was the New York Times headline of the sinking of the Titanic. Titanic sinks 4 hours after hitting an iceberg. 866 people rescued, and probably about 1,250 perish. Well, they didn't have enough lifeboats for everybody. Oh, by the way, they didn't even do a lifeboat drill that they were supposed to do the very day that they hit the iceberg. That morning, they had a lifeboat drill, and the captain canceled it. The lifeboats weren't even all full when they actually started evacuating the boat. And there's stories of survivor and there's everything. But I want to point out a couple of things about this whole analogy that I want to give you. And I think there's a lot of parallels between the sinking of the Titanic, the unsinkable vessel, and another Titanic that is in our culture today. Sorry, let me go back. Did I skip it? There it is. The second Titanic is that of Darwinian evolution. Here you have a group of people who believe that their ship is unsinkable, that they're all right, that they've got it all figured out, that there's no way that they're wrong. And you have lots of people with a lot of arrogance. Anybody that even tries to, imagine metaphorically that you're on this boat and you realize that there's a leak. Well, you're not allowed to say anything about it. You say anything about the leak, they'll throw you off the boat. Well, you're on this boat and you see that there's a gash because it just hit an iceberg and water is coming in and the boat is going to sink. Hey, you better not say anything. We'll throw you off the boat. This boat is not taking in water. This boat is not sinking. And you're not allowed to say otherwise. That's the attitude with which we are confronted. Anytime anybody even attempts to say anything contrary to the established theory of evolution. Now, I want to clarify something here about the theory of evolution. There's two major mistakes that we make when we talk about evolution. We make a mistake and they make a mistake. So let's clarify that before we move any further. First mistake is that we often make the mistake of saying that there is no such thing as evolution and evolution is wrong and, you know, I don't believe in evolution. Okay? That's a mistake. It's a mistake we made, and I've told you on other occasions, it's a mistake we make because we have to define what we mean by evolution. And within that definition, you're going to find that there's two distinct and totally different ideas of what evolution is. And there's one that actually works and one that doesn't. But when we say evolution doesn't work, we throw both out. And we make a mistake. There's a reason why Christians are considered ignorant when we say things like evolution doesn't exist, I don't believe in evolution, because there are volumes, there are libraries, there's hundreds of thousands of research papers written annually that show you that evolution happens. But evolution happens when you define evolution as changes, variation at the genetic level within a kind, within a species or within a kind. Changes or variations that don't require any new information, and there's no crossing of any lines. Bacteria adapts to antibiotics. That's an example. Darwin's finches and their beaks changing, that's an example. You know, their beaks change, but they're still finches. So it's changes within the kind. That happens. Of course it happens. We've been able to use that knowledge to be able to breed animals and domesticate animals. The cat, we've domesticated the cat genetically by applying these principles. Farmers breed all the time and take advantage of these genetic processes within kinds that work. So let us not make that mistake as Christians of saying, you know what, evolution is a mistake, evolution doesn't happen, I don't believe in evolution. Because that's just wrong. Now, the second mistake is made by the other side. The other side believes that because these changes happen at a specific small level, which we call microevolution, by the way, because things happen within a species, they extrapolate that. They take that and they say, okay, it also happens in the big picture. In other words, when we talk about evolution, we're talking about from molecules to man. We're talking about the process by which non-living organism, non-living matter turned into living matter, and that then developed all the way from a single cell, you know, organism all the way to us. And that's macroevolution. So when a scientist says, well, yeah, because there's so much evidence for evolution, they're making a mistake. Because they're saying there's so much evidence for evolution, this kind, but they're saying that in support of this kind, macro, and there is no evidence in support of macro. What I'm talking to you tonight, the ship that's sinking, the Titanic that's sinking, is not that one of microevolution. That is just the fact. You know what? It's a design feature. God made us able to adapt. He did not make us so rigid that any change in temperature and we die. Any change in our diet and we would die. No, God made us completely adaptable, like a good engineer would make anything, able to adapt. So we're not attacking that. We're attacking the other side, the view that from nothing came everything, from molecules to man. The other thing I want to tell you tonight is that I'm not going to give you an in-depth study of evolution and refute every point. That's not my point tonight. My point tonight is to give you a big picture. And to tell you that we're living in exciting times. Exciting times because every single day, science is making progress and discovering and proving that the Word of God is true. And that evolution, macroevolution, is not working. Now, you're not going to hear about it at school. I promise you, you're not going to hear about it from any of your professors. But you can hear about it. It is out there, but you know what? The people that are saying it are those kind of people that they tell you, well, if you say there's anything, if the boat is leaking, we're going to throw you off the boat. You can't say anything. That's how they're being dealt with. Okay? I encourage you, if you like science and you want to stay on top of what's happening, there's one incredible website. It's the Discovery Institute. The Discovery Institute. They're the intelligent design think tank out of Seattle, Washington. They are all PhDs, all incredible scientists, and they put out a newsletter that they put out weekly. It's called Nota Bene, and it means things are not good, you know, for the theory of evolution. And it gives you incredible, incredible papers and arguments in favor of design intelligence and showing you how the Titanic is sinking. So we're only going to take a few of these ideas and hammer them around. Some of them you may have heard before, some of them not. But it's a good thing to understand that we're on the right side of truth. We're on the right side of truth. So when I talk about evolution, there's four major pillars, but there are many more pillars of evolution. There's a lot of things that are hanging here, but I'm just going to give you four pillars. A universe from nothing, purposeless, unguided process, slow, gradual processes, and common ancestry. If you've taken any biology class, if you've taken any astronomy class, pretty much any science class, you've heard these terms. You know, most biology is where you're going to hear more common ancestry and slow, gradual process, purposeless, unguided, but even in astronomy and other classes too, because it's not only the Earth, but all of the universe is supposed to be part of this evolutionary process. So these are the pillars. We're going to take these pillars and we're going to deal with them one by one, a little briefly. We're not going to spend an enormous amount of time. And I'll throw in a few other, you know, pillars in there, here and there, as they come, because they're important. But we're just going to try to focus on these four to get a big picture. Okay, first pillar is a universe from nothing, okay? And I'll let the animal planet tell you how that works, okay? So there's a video coming. We'll get some sound.
To understand these facts, we've had to turn to science. Where did they come from? And how did they get so darned outrageous? Well, it all started with nothing.
Where did all these animals come from? And how did they get so outrageous? And how did they all, well, it all started with
turn to science. Where did they come from? And how did they get so darned outrageous?
Oh, we'll see it again.
Well, it all started with
nothing. Okay. So, the iceberg that hit the Titanic with relationship to that is that nothing comes from nothing. If you were here a couple of months ago, I did a talk called Much Ado About Nothing, and we talked about Lawrence Krauss and his book, The Universe from Nothing, and Stephen Hawking and his book, The Grand Design, and we talked about how these guys are saying that everything came from nothing, but you know what? Nothing doesn't really mean nothing. Nothing has three different meanings. Nothing is complicated, according to Krauss. And I show you, it was hilarious to see them jumping up and down and not making any sense. But it's hard. You can't make sense out of it. If there is nothing, what can come from nothing? Nothing. I mean, this is common sense. I hope this really, like, registers, because it's one of the toughest questions you can ask any evolutionist. Okay, why is there something rather than nothing? If in the beginning there was nothing, as they just told us, then what would there be forever? Nothing. So the question is, why is there something rather than nothing? It's a basic question, simple question, but it doesn't have an answer unless you believe and you posit a creator. So the whole universe from nothing arguments are really out there, but they're desperate, and you understand they're desperate. And they'll come out there and they'll show you, and if you remember the talk, we talked about quantum physics, and they'll throw that word out there. That's the magic word, because since nobody understands quantum physics, you know, well, they throw that out there. Well, the evidence is in quantum physics. Well, quantum physics has showed us that things can spontaneously pop up out of nothing. Well, not exactly. Not exactly. In that talk, I showed you a paper, an article by a Harvard professor of physics, one of the top professors in the country of physics, and he's an astrophysicist. And he's, I think he was a quantum physicist, a quantum physics theorist or something. I forgot the title, it was a bit back. Incredibly, incredibly intelligent man. He's telling you, the first thing you got to forget is this whole idea that virtual particles, they're not particles. Because the whole point is that these virtual particles we've observed in quantum mechanics, they pop into existence out of nothing and then they disappear. So something can pop into existence out of nothing. And he explains, no, that's not the way it works. Not the way it works. You have to have two other objects that cross paths, and the waves, the disturbance that they create, that's what they're talking about. But they call it a particle. It's not a particle. It's a disturbance created by two other things. So it's not from nothing. So, I mean, if you understand a little bit, you understand there's nothing. And nothing comes from nothing, and I'm not going to belabor the point. We'll leave it there. Okay. The second, purposeless, unguided processes. Let's watch the video.
Over the course of 14 billion years, hydrogen gas transformed itself into mountains, butterflies, the music of Bach, and you and me.
Let's watch it again.
Over the course of 14 billion years, hydrogen gas transformed itself into mountains, butterflies, the music of Bach, and you and me.
I got the DVD from that PBS series, and I've gotten so many clips from it. That's the introduction. Can you imagine? This is a public television science documentary explaining to you how hydrogen gas transformed itself into mountains and butterflies, the music of Bach, and you and I. And a little bit of orchestra music behind there, and it sounds so true. Like that whole effect of the background orchestra music. Yeah. Really? Really. Unguided process. So what happens when things happen chaotically without any unguided, without any intelligence behind it, when they just kind of randomly? Do you get order? No. Do you get design? No. Do you get things that work together? No. No. When it's random and unguided and purposeless and blind, there's nothing that's going to happen to lead to anything else. That's just the way it is. Okay? So, but is that what we observe in the universe we live in? Do we observe a universe in which there's no design? Because if there's no purpose and no guide and no intelligence behind it, then there's no design. And you say design, and evolutionists will throw you off the Titanic. You're not allowed to say that. It's not design. But listen, it's so obvious that they can't deny it themselves. Look at some of these quotes. Biology is the study of complicated things that give the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. Richard Dawkins. They're so complicated, they give the appearance. But it's only an appearance. Don't be confused. It only looks like it's been designed. He goes on to say in the same book, we have seen that living things are too improbable and too beautifully designed to have come into existence by chance. Say, all right, Richard, I thought you were an atheist. Good deal. I think you're seeing the light here. He says there has to be a watchmaker. And that's the name of the book, The Blind Watchmaker. So how does he respond to his own awe and amazement at the design of the universe? Well, it was designed by a blind watchmaker. In other words, evolution's watchmaker is both blind and brainless. It's called natural selection. That's the beauty of it. Brainless and blind. So natural selection is the designer of all that apparent design in the universe. But you stop and think about that for a minute. Does that make any sense? First of all, don't even go to origins, because you can't naturally select unless there's a mutation. And there's no mutation unless you have a living organism that has reproduced. So if you don't have any living reproducing organisms, there is no such thing as natural selection. So don't even touch origins. You know, where did these reproducible or reproducing organisms come from? And where did, let's leave that. It's not even an origins question. Natural selection, really, is the designer? Okay. So here's the iceberg that the Titanic runs into. It's called information. I wish I could show you. I have a TED's talk that I found today, so I didn't have time to clip it. But it is phenomenal, because there's an incredible field, a new field in science that's growing tremendously. And the field is, tell you what it's called. I don't want to mess up. It's called systems biology. He's a systems biologist. His name is Larson. I'll give you his full name. Ba-ba-ba-bum-ba-bum. Stephen Larson, who holds a PhD in neuroscience from the University of California, San Diego, a system biology research and consulting company. He owns a systems biology and research company who seeks to understand biology through computation. So they mixed computers and science and engineering to understand biology. It's a new field. So in this TED Talk, he talks about information. And he talks about the cell, and he talks about biology. And listen to what he says. This is a transcript of the part that I want to read to you. So he's talking about all this design, and he says this. He says, now, what's most unsettling to me about this is that we didn't build these machines, because he's talking about the incredible complexity of the machines that are in the cell. As someone originally trained as an engineer, I've got to be honest with you, I kind of hate this. I hate this. As the most clever species on the planet, we kind of like to think of ourselves as the builders of the most sophisticated technology in the entire universe. We invented written language and the printing press. We cured polio and sent man to the moon. Heck, we even took savage beasts, turned them into kittens, and then built a global communication network to share pictures of them. That's pretty impressive. And then he says, and yet, when I look through a microscope at the humble bacterium, by the way its ancestors were on the planet, by the way, its ancestors were on the planet billions of years ago, I still wonder how it really works. Because the mechanical watch that is life is not like any watch ever built. He's talking about just the bacterium. It is biological gears and springs, but they fill rooms and buildings of the city of a vast microscope landscape that's bustling with activity. He goes on to say, on the one hand, it's extremely well organized, but on the other hand, the sheer scale of all of this unfamiliar, well-organized stuff that happens in there makes me feel that I've stumbled onto an alternative landscape of technology that's built by an engineer a million times smarter than me. He's looking at a microscope, and what he sees leads him to believe that he's looking at the work of an engineer that's a million times smarter than he is. But, of course, there is no such engineer. It all happened randomly. Natural selection. That's the contradiction of it. That's an incredible contradiction of it. You look at the information. Where did the information come from in the cell? We've talked about this before. This is another great question to ask somebody. One question is, why is there something rather than nothing? Here's another great question to ask an evolutionist. Where did the information come from in DNA? Do explosions produce information? No. Not the kind of information we're talking about. Does wind and erosion and chance, and do the laws of physics create information? No. The laws just describe how things interact with each other. Information. Where did the information come from? You realize that our DNA is like blueprints to a house. Our DNA has all the blueprints, and it has all the information necessary to build every single part. If you run into a set of drawings like this, do you believe for a second that there's no intelligence behind that nobody did this, that it just is an unguided process, that somehow this happened? Of course not. Of course not. You would never think that. Where did the information come from? Everyone knows that information only comes from minds. It follows that the more complex and sophisticated the information, the more intelligent the mind behind it. That's just common sense. And the information in DNA is so incredibly complex. Another set of plans that we have inside of us that is so marvelously designed. The information is detailed information, building instructions, material specifications, engineering, calculations. Everything is in our DNA. Everything. To the point that you got to understand this, because even if you're not a lot into science, think about this for a minute. If you grasp this, it'll blow your mind. The information in that one cell that is fertilized by mom and dad, 23 chromosomes each, one cell, has all the information it needs, not only the instructions on how to build a human being, not only the instructions, because instructions are instructions. I can put a book on the shelf all its life, it's never going to build anything. It also has the mechanisms in the cell to extract that information, and it has the mechanisms in the cell to build what the instructions say have to be built and how to build it, plus it has the materials that it needs to be able to build it. All of that is inside that one cell. And it starts dividing in parts. It starts splitting up in a process where they just multiply and they specialize. And certain cells build this and certain cells build that. Certain cells make sure that everything that's built works together and comes together. I mean, just think of your arm. You know, some cells built the skin, some cells built the hair, some the hair follicles, the roots. Some cells built the bone. Then there's ligaments and there's muscles and there's cartilage and there's tissue and there's all kinds of stuff in there. All kinds of, plus the veins and the nerves and everything that comes through it and how it all works together and how it's all hardwired to the brain. Everything, the perfect human being in that one cell. In that one cell. And guess what? We didn't intervene at all. No hands were involved in that. Once that egg is fertilized, once that cell, it runs on its own. All you do as a mom is you eat. You eat. You need, it needs calcium for building bones, and you eat, it makes you want to drink milk. So you drink milk, and the milk, somehow, that milk that you drink gets to the right place for the cells to be able to build bones with it. Inside the placenta. Listen, it's just mind-boggling. Where did all that information, specific instructions come from? Where? There's no answer. DNA is based on a specific alphabet, arranged in a specific order, following specific syntax, in order to convey a specific information that's found in each one of us. A full complement of human DNA has more than 3 billion individual characters, all arranged in such a way as to convey detailed instructions. It consists of incredibly meaningful volumes of useful, purposeful information. Thousands of volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica in every cell. And you have over 100 trillion cells in your body. It's incredible. Incredible. That this is just mind-boggling. And then, do you think the Titanic is doing real well here with this iceberg? I don't think so. Because you have to explain all of this without any intelligence behind it. No intelligence. There was an explosion, a big bang, and from that big bang, somehow all of that information is stored in DNA and everything is designed. The whole reproductive system came out of that. Of course, I mean, step by step, over a long period of time. We'll talk about time in a second. Slow, gradual processes, billions of years, and the fossil record is our evidence. That's another pillar of evolution, another pillar of the Titanic that's sinking. Billions of years, fossil record. So let me talk to you first about the iceberg that's going to deal with this. There's a Cambrian explosion. The fossils don't say what they're supposed to say, period. They don't. Darwin predicted that you would have the smallest, simplest organisms in the lowest stratas of in a geological scale. Then you would have more complex, then more complex, and more complex. And the closer you got to the surface of the earth, those stratuses would have the most complex organisms because that's a slow, gradual process of evolution. Except that we know now that it didn't happen that way because of something called the Cambrian explosion. By the way, there was no explosion. It's just they call it that because all of a sudden when you get to one of those stratus called the Cambrian, all life forms appear fully formed in that stratus. Everything below it is simple and non-complex and just nothing. All life forms unchanged from what they are today appear in the Cambrian level, in the Cambrian stratus, all of them. So it's called the Cambrian explosion. All of a sudden, life exploded into existence, all this diversity. Now, does that sound like slow, gradual process, or does that sound like a creation at a specific moment where everything was created at the same time? The evidence is kind of obvious. So the fossil records is a problem. Not enough time is another problem. By the way, 3.7 billion years, which is what they say the Earth is, more or less 3.7 to 4 point something billion years, is not enough time. Evolutionists now are telling you it's not enough time. We figured out how long it takes for mutations to go from one generation to the next to produce any kind of significant change. And to account for everything that we have now in this universe, in this planet in particular, it's not enough time. nowhere near enough time. So something must have happened that we're not aware of, so that everything could have been done in 3-point-something billion years, because it's not enough time for these slow, gradual processes to occur. By the way, there's a lot of problems with time in modern science, a lot of problems with time. By the way, it's not Christians telling you that they need more time. We don't believe they need that much time to begin with. It's evolution telling you, look, the 3-point-something billion is not enough. We don't know how it happened. And then you have problems with time in general, because how old is the universe? 14 billion years, roughly, give or take a couple hundred million. 14 billion years old, that's what science says. You know there's a lot of problems with that, because they've now found a couple of stars that are older than the universe. How does that work? Oh, it has to be 14.2 because of this law and that law and this explosion, the acceleration and the background radiation. And it has to be 14.2. And that's an exact number because it has to be 14.2. You know, you young earthers are crazy. It has to be 14.2. But here we find a star that's 16.7. How did that happen? Wait a minute, maybe we're not measuring right. Maybe we haven't figured out how to measure time right. Maybe we've got the whole scale wrong. And it's just not one. It's several stars that are older than the universe. And guess what? Astronomers and astrophysicists will tell you that 14 billion is not enough time to account for what we observe in the universe. Not enough time. Something wrong with those scales. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Okay, how about common ancestry? This one's cool. I've shown you this video before. I love it. The evolution of the whale. Okay, well, let's watch that. This is from the Smithsonian Museum. A wolf-like creature made its way to the ocean, lost all of its hair, as you can see. Its beak extended. All of a sudden, it grew, you know, all kinds of, well, all of a sudden, no, it took billions of years. And by the time it turns around, guess what? We got a whale. Smithsonian Museum, the evolution of the whale, right there. Come on, you flat earth Christians. You guys are believing that, you know, creation, that's how it happened. That's how it happened. So you have a cell somehow made its way out of the pond as in the form of some kind of lizard or jellyfish or something, or not jellyfish, some kind of lizard or snake or something out of it. And then it somehow grew legs and somehow grew hair and somehow became like a wolf-like creature, and then over billions of years, and then, hey, you know what? I'm not happy out here. I want to go back in the water where my ancestors are from. So instead, I'm going to change my lungs for gills by just going into the water. Somehow that's going to happen. My kids are going to have gills instead of lungs because I'm going into the water so much. You know, mutations. And then I'm going to build, you know, I'm going to lose my legs, and they're going to reduce and shrink, and they're going to become little fins. And then my back legs are going to come together and do a little one of these so I can swim. And then I'm going to gain 32,000 pounds. And I'm going to become a whale. That's how it happened. The boat is sinking, guys. It's hit an iceberg, and it is sinking. And everybody on it is so arrogant that they refuse to accept it. They refuse to accept it. They refuse to even listen to the fact that there's a leak, that we've hit an iceberg. No, we have not hit anything. If you keep saying that, we're going to throw you off the boat. Seriously? Common ancestry. Oh, don't you notice the similarities? That's another argument. It's called homogeny. It means that we have similar body parts. Certain animals and us have similar digestive systems. You see, that means one came from the other. Our bones. You know, our bone structure in our arms is similar to that of a dog's arms or legs. Similar, there's some similarities, the way the joints and the muscles and the ligaments and all of that works. I mean, come on, that shows you that we come from a common ancestor. Does it really? How about another explanation for that? How about the one person who knows how to design something perfectly to be able to live in this world that we live in with the gravity and the laws of physics that we have in this world, design the body that works, and uses that design for all of his creation because they all live in the same planet. And they all eat from the same food. And they're all exposed to the same elements. So if I'm going to design all of these different animals, well, why not use some of the same designs in them that I'm using in my prized creation? You see, you look at all the paintings by the same painter, and they all have that touch, that similarity, that peculiarity of that painter. To me, the similarities point to the common designer. And that is a very rational answer and perspective to that. But you don't hear that. You only hear that the similarities mean we came from each other. How about DNA? I forgot to mention this a few minutes ago. But one of the biggest arguments that science has used to prove evolution is junk DNA. Junk DNA. Come on. What kind of a design? Where 2% of your DNA is used for coding for protein and 98% of your DNA is junk. What kind of a design is that? If that was designed by somebody, I mean, it was a bad designer. Because only 2% of your DNA is used for coding. What about the other 98% of your DNA? It's junk DNA. That's what they kept saying, junk DNA. And then a group of scientists called ENCODE, Encyclopedia of DNA. I want you to look it up, ENCODE. This is not Christians, by the way. These are scientists from Cambridge, Oxford, Harvard, from all of the universities across the country. Hundreds of scientists collaborating, working together to go through the genes in the DNA and figure out what they're for. And after their first study that took years of observation and experimentation, they have the raw data, they have the processed data, they have the hard facts in front of you to show you that 80% of what we thought was junk has a purpose. 80% of that junk DNA is used in our immune system, it's used in different aspects of our body and different development stages. They have found, and there's only 20% right now that they don't know what it's for. But you know what they predicted? That in phase 3, that's going to start soon, they'll be able to categorize those 20. They just didn't get to it, that 20%. So what happened to the junk DNA? It's not junk after all. How arrogant do you have to be to look at something like DNA, and because you don't understand what it's for, you categorize it as junk DNA, useless. How arrogant do you have to be? And these guys, they broke it. And these are not Christians. These are not Christians doing this project. Most of them adhere to evolution. Most of them, like almost every one of them. And look at the conclusions they're reaching. It's not junk DNA. It has a purpose. Well, of course, then you have all of those on the Titanic saying, no, it's not. Nope, you're wrong. Nope, I don't want to hear it. It'll throw you off the boat. Nope. It's only 50%. Hello? If it's 50%, that still implies design, not junk, right? So you're shooting yourself in the foot because the other 50% is coming. But it's not 50, it's 80. They've decided. Their studies are written. It's there. ENCODE. Look at it. Look it up. Common ancestry. I think you've seen these phylogenetic charts before. Carl Kirby uses them a lot. What do the fossils records say? Do we come from a common ancestor? Okay, that you're looking at there is the dinosaur family tree. Okay, and it shows all the different dinosaurs as they have evolved, and where they all come from, and all the different lineages and the birds and all of them. They're right there. They're categorized all of them there. Now the red line is fossil evidence. Okay, and the white line is where we don't have any evidence yet, according to science. So the red lines talk about facts, and the white lines talk about a story. You know, fiction, what we believe, what may happen, what may not have happened. But if you look at that, every single one of those lines is not connected to the next. A cephalosaur has always been a cephalosaur, every one of them has always been what they've always been. And those transitions, all of those transitions, you know, that connect them all of those points right there of connection and splitting off, there's zero evidence for any of that. None, no evidence. Everything stays within its line. So we all come from a common ancestor, really? That's not what the evidence shows. Well, you say, well, that's just with the dinosaurs. Okay. Now these are whales. These are the whales. What do you have? The dotted lines are, we don't have any evidence. The solid figure, and by the way, these charts are from their books. These are not from Christian creation books. These are from biology textbooks, okay? So their charts say that they've always been the same. Always the same. There's no interconnection. All of these dotted lines, those are the stories where they supposedly connected. That's all a story. The evidence doesn't connect them. Here's all mammals, mammalian phylogenetic chart. Okay? Again, a lot of dotted lines. Wherever you have hard evidence, it's not transitional. It's not connecting two types. It's all, everything has always been a bat, has always been a bat. A squirrel has always been a squirrel. A monkey has always been a monkey. It's consistent. You look at the phylogenetic charts. Now, today, it's getting harder to find these charts because somebody caught on to the fact that, man, we're making it too easy for people to see that we really don't have a connection here. So the charts now are super complicated. You need, like, to take a course on how to read the chart before you can read the chart in the book, okay? But this is it. This is basic. It just shows you that the common ancestry is not there. It's a story. So I posit to you that for this and for many other reasons, listen, we haven't touched on the discoveries of dinosaur tissue. Oh, you Christians, you guys are wackos. You guys believe that men and dinosaurs existed at the same time. Come on. Like, you guys are weird. You're idiots. You're morons. Dinosaurs existed 65 million years ago, and man has only been around for a couple of 100,000. They didn't exist together. Are you crazy? Oh, but wait a minute. We just found some dinosaur bones in Montana and Colorado and Georgia and Asia and Africa and a lot of different places. And these dinosaur bones we've now discovered have DNA, tissue, blood cells, organic material in them. And here's the miracle of that. Every biology and chemistry book you'll ever read, every one of them will tell you that those organic materials do not last longer than 50,000 years under the best of circumstances when an animal has died. Everything when you die decomposes, deteriorates, and becomes nothing. So the life expectancy, the shelf life of tissue and red blood cells and all of that soft tissue is at most 50,000. At most. So how did a 64 million year old dinosaur still have red blood cells and tissue? Maybe they weren't around 64 million years ago. Maybe they're around a lot closer to our life expectancy or man on Earth. So, and it's not just one scientist finding this. It's many scientists in different locations, and it's all being corroborated. Now everybody's freaking out. Well, how did this happen? How did we miss this? You see what's happening in every single area, in every single pillar of evolution is crumbling. Every single pillar of this macro evolution. Please, I clarified at the beginning. Not micro. We know that works. That's a design feature in this macro. And I want you to listen to an interview that took place, and the biologist's name was not given in the article to protect him. But listen to this interview, okay? And we'll finish with this. A molecular biologist working on identifying genetic controls for diseases was interviewed by George Kaler of The Ledger in Lynchburg, Virginia. His article is entitled The Biologist, and it appeared in February of 2000. Listen to this interview with this guy, okay? The interviewer asked, "Do you believe that the genetics or the genetic information evolved?" His response, "George, nobody I know in my profession believes it evolved. It was engineered by genius beyond genius, and such information could not have been written any other way. The paper and ink did not write the book. Knowing what we know, it is ridiculous to think otherwise. Did you just hear what he said? What is science study? The paper and the ink. We can talk about proteins, and we can talk about amino acids, and we can talk about, but that's the paper and the ink. Paper and ink don't write books. Intelligence is behind information. That's what he's telling you. We all know. He says he doesn't know a single biologist that believes that this happened by chance, by evolution. No. By a genius beyond genius behind this. Okay? So have you ever stated that in a public lecture or in any public writings? That's a good follow-up question. No, I just say it evolved. To be a molecular biologist requires one to hold on to two insanities all at the same time. One, it would be insane to believe in evolution when you can see the truth for yourself. And two, it would be insane to say you don't believe in evolution. All government work, research grants, papers, big college lectures, everything would stop. I'd be out of a job or regulated to the outer fringes where I couldn't earn, or relegated, I'm sorry, to the outer fringes where I couldn't earn a decent living if I said this. That's his answer. The interviewer, I hate to say it, but that sounds intellectually dishonest. His response, the work I do in genetic research is honorable. We will find the cure to many of mankind's worst diseases. But in the meantime, we have to live with the elephant in the room. What elephant? Creation design. It's like an elephant in the living room. It moves around, takes up an enormous amount of space, loudly trumps, bumps into us, knocks things over, eats a ton of hay, and smells like an elephant. And yet we have to swear it isn't there. Wow. Think about that. That's why the analogy fits. We're on the boat hit an iceberg, it's taking in water, and we're like, nah, that's not going to sink. Water, iceberg, what are you talking about? Shut up. If you keep talking about that iceberg, we're going to throw you off the boat. That's the arrogance. That's the hubris. That's what we're dealing with. And so tonight, I just wanted to share with you that these are really, really exciting times we're living in. I don't know, and I'll be honest here, because I've been thinking about this a lot. I don't know if your generation, the younger people, I don't know if your generation will be the generation to have the courage to walk away from that view of macroevolution. It may never happen. Because what are the alternatives? Think about it for a minute. If you refuse to believe that there's a God, you are a naturalist. You believe that the only thing that exists is nature. And you reject evolution. What do you have left? How do you explain anything? So the only alternative, the only reasonable answer is an intelligent creator. And some people have posited an alien. Some alien life force that's very intelligent has created us. They're willing to say that. It's like Ben Stein said, they don't have a problem with intelligent design or an intelligent designer. They just have a problem with who it is. It could be an alien from another planet, but it is not God. The problem is with God. So you can rest assured, you can walk out of here today confident, knowing that what you believe is true. What you have in front of you is true. And the Bible has seemed ridiculous for a long time. Well, we patiently sat there and believed God for what he had said. But now the Bible is not looking so ridiculous anymore. Now science is really taking our side on a lot of these things. And if you really follow these people, you're going to notice, like if you go to the Discovery Institute website and you start looking, there's a growing number of scientists that are buying into this. They haven't become Christians and they're not believing in God, but they're saying Darwinism doesn't work. It's just, we can't keep holding on to this. The most famous one is Thomas Nagel from New York University. He wrote a book where he said, where he argues that we got to move to something else because Darwinian evolution, that macroevolution thing, that doesn't answer questions. It doesn't work. We got to move on. It's not God, but we got to move on to find something else. Oh, that's the first step. The first step is, you know, this is not working. We got to find an alternative. So be confident. These are great times we're living in. And God's word is being upheld. We have other battles, and we're fighting other battles, and they're going to get more intense. But this one, I think it's heavily leaning in our favor. Let's stand up tonight.